All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another podcast episode. Today we have Alex. She already interviewed me a few weeks ago, and I had to have her on my show because there's so many things I want to know about her. And she's active on Noster. And, well, why should I, like, tell you about her when she can tell you herself? So, Alex, can you tell us who you are and what you do for a living, if it's okay?
Yes, let me think. I don't even know exactly what I'm doing for a living. So I have an unschooling podcast where I talk about why my kid doesn't go to school, how we organize that, how we do world schooling and working from home at the same time and being a full-time mom, all these kind of things. And what else am I doing? I'm working for a very good friend of mine. He has always like the craziest ideas. Now he's setting up a Bitcoin podcast in Germany or for the German-speaking country. So I'm doing that podcast as well. Sometimes I'm doing marketing and Bitcoin coaching and this and that. But my really favorite thing to do is talking about Bitcoin and unschooling. So I don't even know what my job exactly is. So I'm sorry, I cannot say anything better.
It certainly sounds like you love what you're doing. I guess that's what matters. And
yes, true.
I guess let's start with the unschooling, homeschooling part. Well, first of all, for those who aren't aware, could you explain the difference between homeschooling and unschooling and what brought you to unschooling?
So I think the main difference between homeschooling and unschooling is really the radical form of not doing anything actively with your kids. Like, I don't have no curriculum. I don't have any goal that my child needs to reach or to fulfill. Or there's nothing that unschooling kids really need to learn. So it's just following their curiosity, their journey, and supporting them as the coach at home, like enabling them, so to say. And what led me to be like this radical unschooling mom? I'm a teacher myself. I went to school, like very strict private school in Germany. I had like the best education that I could have had. And then I went to university for like 10 years. I studied so many things from Arabic to history to becoming a German teacher. There's really nothing I didn't do. And it was super interesting. But I was, when I finished university, I was 27 and I still didn't know who I am, what I can, what I can't, all these things. And I already had my child at 23. So I was already a mom and I had no clue about life, to be honest. And then we lived in Berlin. So we checked out 34 different schools and a lot of free schools. And all these schools were just a fucking shit show. So my son, even the free schools, and he was standing there and he was like, this looks so much like slavery. Do they enjoy it here? And I was like, I don't think so, because I don't. I really don't. And even the free schools, it's like you have to be there at 8 o'clock. You have to spend like your 8 hours over there. Even if you are free to do what they can offer in this time, the offerings were quite, yeah, depressing. Because the world is such a beautiful place. And then I saw these buildings with these kids and they were all quite sad. I mean, it's better than regular school, I guess, these free schools in Germany and democratic schools. So that's beautiful. But in the end, you're not free to travel. You're not free to just skip a day or these kind of things. And I'm a person, I cannot commit to get up every day at 7 to do something at 8. I can't. How can I tell my child this is how we should live? Because I don't believe in it. Maybe I'm an asshole for saying that. And it's fine if other people can do this lifestyle, but I can't. And I really want to travel and all my university time. So you go to university 3 months, then you have like 3 months break, 3 months university, 3 months break. And in these 3 months, we always traveled a lot. So thinking about the ways, how could I stay in Berlin close to my friends and raise my child? But I had to realize like these schools, this is just bullshit. And I didn't know that unschooling existed. So I was like, okay, let's just travel and figure it out on the way. You are young. You don't have to go to school with like 6 or 5 years. So, and I almost ended up in jail anyway. So I had to leave the country very, next day, basically,
yeah.
To
wow.
Not end up in jail. So this is how.
Was it by any way related to not wanting to send your child to school?
Yes. That was exactly the reason, because I already told them that normally kids go to school between 5 and 6, but I told them like I want to wait until 7, and they were like, you don't have no reason. Your child is healthy and he's doing well in kindergarten, and he went to a democratic kindergarten where he could do how he felt. I mean, in the boundaries of the social construct there was in the kindergarten, he was deciding when to eat, what to eat, with whom to play, what to play, when to play, where to play. And then shifting into a mindset of people tell you that you have to be there at 8 o'clock, didn't feel right. So I was like pushing it to 7 instead of 6. And they were like, you got to go now. And I was like, oh, no, fuck. But the good part was somebody at the school, I don't even know what it is, like this ayuntamiento for school. What is it called? I don't even know. The school.
Like foundation system. Or association or.
Yeah, I don't even know. The people who organize who's going to school when and where in Berlin, they lost all our documents. And therefore, I wasn't able to send him to school early. So this gave me the time to leave Germany without any legal consequences, because they couldn't prove anything anymore. And so I was like, let's go. And we left Germany within a week after that incident. And on the way, like through traveling, I decided I'm not a teacher, at least not for my son. I hate being a teacher. I'm a good coach. And this is what I started doing. And in my head, I was like, oh my God, he's 6. He needs to learn how to read. And I made like games for him to learn the alphabet and stuff. And he wasn't interested. And it almost ruined our relationship, because with my German mind, I was like, wow, dude, you need to learn this now. And I was really strict and really pushy. And I learned my son is not someone who you can just push into learning. So I was like, maybe I just leave him alone. And then I started to realize I don't want to teach him anything. I just want him to be free. And then I researched into, can you just let your kids run around and be free? And I found out, yes, you just can. You just can leave them alone and let them do whatever they want to do, and they will learn. And we spend a lot of time in the jungle, and the jungle kids were so happy and educated, well-behaved. I was like, they don't have school. Why was I even thinking he needs school? But that is my old programming. So through all the travels, I decided I was just set him free. There's no turning back on it on a certain point, because my son was used to being his own boss anyway. So you got to do what you got to do. But it was a hard journey for me.
I mean, like, just amazing to think that you could go to jail for not wanting to put your own children, your own child in school. And then what? Like that you go to jail, and what happens to your child? He gets raised by the state. It's it's criminal in my mind. I just can't wrap my head around that. But it's almost as if God or destiny was giving you the signal. They gave you the option to get out of Germany. Like that's I don't know how efficient.
You know, it was really hard for me, because I wanted to stay with my friends, because I have not such a well-connected family. So I was like, my friends and my family, let's stay in Germany. And I remember I was sitting on my couch back home, and I was crying like, oh my God, I need to leave the country. What the fuck? How can I organize that? I'm just a single mom with a cat and a kid.
Did they make you feel like a criminal, or did you know you're doing the right thing?
No, I mean, for me, I knew basically since I was born, I'm a criminal in Germany, and I have to leave one day because I'm too free to fit in the German society. Wow. I knew this right from the beginning, but that hit really hard when I was like, oh my God, it's true. I need to leave because I don't want to go to jail. But there was a voice in my head telling me, like, this is the best thing that ever happened to you. Trust me. And I was like, okay, I trust you. And it was. Basically, it was the best thing.
And what was the first destination? You mentioned jungle. Thailand, was it?
Oh, yes. So this was when we really left Germany without having a backup plan, like an apartment or anything in Germany. Our first goal were the Canary Islands, because it was the farthest point that I could travel to while still being in Europe. Because I promised my grandpa and my grandma, I'm not going to leave Europe, not for long. So this was my first step. But before, we were all over Europe. We were like really exploring all the different countries. And since he was 3 months old, I traveled with him to Thailand and to Vietnam and back and forth. And we really spent a lot of time in Thailand in the jungle. The place doesn't exist today anymore. There's now a 7-Eleven. Because I was thinking, hey, let's go back there. And then I researched the place. There was an old lady from England. She had like 4 huts in the middle of the jungle, and she rented it out to crazy people. It doesn't exist anymore. But Thailand was, I mean, it doesn't matter if it's Thailand or anything else, but really what brought me more into unschooling was the jungle and the jungle people. Because basically they do unschooling. They just go with the flow and they trust that their kids will learn whatever they need to survive in the moment they are confronted with whatever it might be. So that taught me a lot. And that taught me also to have faith. Like, this will work out. Everything's going to be all right. Because my German head was like, oh my God, what are you doing? My heart it's was over. All right. But my head, like, what? No.
You had a fight against the deep programming. Like, you mentioned that since you were young, you had this more freedom-oriented mind. But I'm guessing the programming can get really strong, especially if you're a child. You know, growing up, it's kind of hard to, you know, you're taught what you're taught, and that's the world you grow up in. So first of all, I got to say, wow, that's an amazing story, honestly. And but did Bitcoin play a part in this of feeling you have more freedom, yes, or did Bitcoin come later?
No, that was in between, to be honest. 2015, I learned about Bitcoin because I wanted to invest like 500 bucks I got from my grandparents. I was like, oh my God, first time in my life I have 500 bucks that I don't need to spend right away for groceries or anything like that. So I was like, wow, I'm going to invest big time. So I was researching and I had a look at stock market and all these things. And I was like, this feels like scam with extra steps. So I wasn't really happy to invest anything, to be honest. And then I was like researching like scammy, shady things to invest in. I was like, ah, Bitcoin, that sounds so good. What is that? I didn't understand it at all. I just saw it's made by lunatics that love freedom. And I was like, this is my investment. And to be honest, all my Thailand trips I paid from this money I made back then with my Bitcoin. Of course, I spend it all. I could have been a millionaire. I'm not, far away from it. But luckily, I spent that money to better my situation and my son's situation and to buy freedom to leave Germany and these things. I could never have done it because I was still studying and I didn't make any money, to be honest. But this 500 bucks made me travel to Thailand for like 3 years back and forth.
Wow.
It was well spent.
Definitely. Because at the end of the day, it's when you die, you think about what you did with your life. You know, you can die with all the Bitcoin in the world, but it's not worth anything if you didn't really enjoy your own life. So I think,
so true.
I mean, apart from that, you also helped move Bitcoin. You know, like his name is Laszlo, the pizza guy, the guy who spent like 10,000 Bitcoin on. I mean, he got the economy going, like circulating the Bitcoin. So everyone played a part initially, you know, whether you spent it all in the beginning, no point in regretting, in my opinion. But, so the next question that I had in mind was like, what were your biggest challenges regarding like homeschooling, unschooling? But honestly, I guess like fleeing your country because you're about to be arrested was definitely one of the biggest challenges, I would assume. But after that, what were the biggest challenges?
So I think I have 3 challenges, like really, that I needed to leave Spain as well because of the homeschooling. They wanted to put me, like, not in jail, but you just go to court, first of all, and it's a long journey. It's not that scary as in Germany, but I had to leave Spain because of that. Luckily, I had to, because now I'm in Mexico, and Mexico is awesome, way better than Spain. Thank you so much, Spain, for kicking me out. And I think the biggest thing is really my mind. Now, not anymore, because now I'm secure in who I am, what I do, and I see the results. But because my family really hated me for it, I got so much hate. And when I go back to Germany for like Christmas, like a week or something, I know that my dad is gonna fucking lose it, scream at me like, this kid has to go to school. What are you doing? And it's always the same. And I could see that every year that I'm going back to my family, I'm more relaxed and I'm more like, whatever you say, you can scream all day. I don't change. I don't give a fuck anymore. I'm so sorry to say that, but I ran out of fucks to give. And that was the hardest part, to reach the point of where I'm so secure in what I do that I could people that are really close to me to shut the fuck up. And now I know that I'm just running around and screaming at people like, wow, unschooling, it's the best thing ever. But I was so ashamed for it at the beginning, because I'm already different than everyone else. I'm always the one who is like the black sheep in the family. I'm doing everything wrong and I'm living such a crazy lifestyle. And on top of that, no school, you know, that was really, really hard. Now, the result is my kid is the best kid in the family. Everyone can see it. It's clear. So they don't really have anything to say anymore, because he's the smartest. He speaks 3 languages. They just won. Like, my family is just German speaking people. And what I really think is the biggest part was my programming, my fears, my insecurity, and also this fear of not making it as a single mom, 24/7 with your kid, your pets, traveling the world, and everything is really scary when you're alone all the time. But it made me a better human being. And I need to say, I'm very, very lucky that I had the chance to go through these processes, because otherwise, how boring would my life have been? I would be living in Berlin, doing the same thing every day over and over again. So I'm just like, wow, thank God this didn't work out.
It really does seem you have all the traits of a Bitcoiner, you know, freedom minded, yeah. Going down rabbit holes. That's amazing. And actually, have you been part of Bitcoiner communities in the different countries you visited? Like, have you managed to meet fellow Bitcoiners?
Never. Or
not really.
Never.
No.
I was one time I was in Madeira on a Bitcoin conference, because I was invited to speak about unschooling. And that was really the first time I was really bathing like in this vibe of the Bitcoin people, and it was quite cute. But normally I'm very shy and I'm not like outgoing, and I'm always busy with work, my son, myself, my dogs. So I'm never like going out and like, oh, I make friends here or there. And I'm not staying long enough to really make deep friendships normally. So I'm never really in these kind of communities. But what I can say is that my long-term friends, I turned them all into Bitcoiners. And that made me quite proud, because now I have my own,
wow,
like little friends, family that is now being completely converted. And I never preached like, oh my God, you have to buy a Bitcoin. But they saw how I'm into it, that I'm not losing interest. And I'm a person, I lose interest in a couple of seconds. You can tell me the craziest thing that happened to you, it's not going to spark any joy in me in like 2 minutes anymore. So I'm really hopping from one topic to the next, because I need more input, I need more action, I need more this. But Bitcoin stayed, and that made my friends like, wow, we gotta give it a shot, because she's still on it and she's a lunatic. So we got to do it. So that is really beautiful to see. And I also converted my work team from crypto lovers into Bitcoin only, without anything that I wasn't converting them, but they saw that I was just right. Everything else is a scam over the years. So that is beautiful. Yeah. And yeah, I do miss a community here and there. I would love to join some other like little community.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things I want to do this year. I want to find that physical community. And I think it, one cool thing would be to have like multiple communities around the world, because I also would like to travel constantly. I'm actually building my life towards that. And I think I'm kind of close to that. And one thing you're doing is you're leading by example. And that's amazing. Like both in like money sense with Bitcoin and your fellow colleagues, and with your family, you're leading through like educating your child, showing them that the state isn't the only way to educate. Well, I would say it's not a way to educate someone. The state is actually the opposite. I think it makes you dumber. But anyways, what are your top 3-5 rabbit holes? You say you like to jump from topic to topic. Mm-hmm. What have been the things that you're most passionate about? I mean, I know Bitcoin is one of them, mm-hmm. and I guess unschooling and homeschooling. Exactly. Anything else you'd like to mention?
Oh, yes. Psychedelics. I love psychedelics. I'm so sorry, but I think that was the only thing that helped me going through my family issues, because I really had a traumatic childhood and I was dragging all these heavy thoughts with me all my life. I tried therapy in different countries. I tried remote therapy. I tried this, and I tried being just forget about it and be happy. And nothing worked. But what worked was going to the jungle, meeting an old guy that gave me stuff to try. And then I was suddenly very happy and very, let's say, clear and focused. And I didn't have the feeling like, oh, I have to go back and take the drugs every 2 days. It was one time. It helped me immensely. And from there on, I tried different psychedelics. And that led me to understand, what is a human being? What are we doing here? I mean, I don't have the answer, but at least I know that everything they tell us about who we are, what we do here is complete bullshit. And this rabbit hole, I love it. The food rabbit hole is very important for me. But I think that's related to general lifestyle. What do you wear? Is it made from algodon? What is the English word for algodon?
I don't cotton. Know.
Cotton, of course. And yeah, I just like to have this healthy lifestyle. And my last rabbit hole is really languages. I love languages so much. And I have the feeling the more I travel, the more languages I speak, the deeper I understand life and the deeper I can connect to cultures and people. And it makes it quite easy to go somewhere to start a new life over and over and over again, because I'm not like, oh my God, I'm afraid I cannot connect to the people. I'm like, okay, it's just another language. Give me 2 months. And I think this is my top 5 for a happy living.
Okay, so a few questions there. Which have been your favorite psychedelics?
Oh. So I love them all. I don't have any favorite. What I really like is the combination of... I love mushrooms because it's easy to get and it's easy to do it by yourself. You don't have to... I mean, it helps if you're in the jungle and surrounded by beautiful nature and beautiful people, but you can also do it at home in your bed and just being low-key. Yeah, just...
Have you heard about the special, I think it's a mushroom, that they grow here in Mexico?
This is the one I take. And you can combine it with, they have stuff here. I love it. It's called Temazcal. It's like a sweat hut. And if you take mushrooms and combine it, there's a shaman. He's singing and drumming and you're in this dark stone hut and it's super hot and it's just intense. And I had the feeling, I did it with my son. I mean, he didn't take any mushrooms, but they were like quite, I think we were 15 people. And it was such a beautiful thing to go through this all together, like sweating for an hour, singing and having these hot stones. And for me, it was like the best psychedelic experience ever, because it was just microdosing, so nothing crazy. But being so close and so naked with all these strangers, singing with them, and I don't know, it was so intense. I could let go of so many crazy things. At the end, I was just hysterically laughing because I couldn't cry somehow. I was like, and it was a very crazy experience. But this is something I can recommend because I didn't feel lonely. It felt like everyone was leaving something behind at that day. And we were very openly talking about it. Like everyone was sharing what they were working on. And then, I don't know, that was the best thing I had in years, I guess, because I wasn't alone. It was, and before I was very happy just doing things on my own, but this time with people together, it was somehow relieving to be able to have that experience in a community with people you don't even know. And I was like, oh, I don't like people, but this thing, beautiful.
It's strange. I mean, I've never tried it. I'm curious about it. I know people who've done it personally, but some people have not so good experiences. Like they experience moments of euphoria, like stress, anxiety. Yeah. And then it varies like a roller coaster, good and bad.
Yes.
So did anyone in your groups, like when you're doing that, does anyone lose it?
No, not at all. No, but I can say that I saw some people having like bad trips, but I think it is all connected to what you eat, how you feel, what is the setting? Do you have a trip sitter? Do you have, what is the connection between you and the people, first of all, that you're with? And I really think if you really have something like a bad trip, I don't want to call it bad trip, because even in the bad trips, I felt like, wow, I'm working on something. I remember one time I took mushrooms with a friend of mine and we were all alone, no kids, no nothing, just 48 hours of freedom. Food was prepared. It was warm. It was sunny. It was nature. It was beautiful. And the mushrooms really asked me if I want to go to the left side and have a deep topic about my mom. And I was like, no, not my mom. And right side, the mushroom told me a deep topic, but it will be hilarious. And I was like, okay, this is the way to go. Thank you so much for asking me. I want to go the right way and I want to laugh my ass off. Turned out it was the same topic, because in the end, the two topics were combined into one conclusion that helped me immensely understand my passion for languages and understand why I have issues with my mom, why this is connected. And it doesn't make sense to explain it now, but could have been a horror trip. And my friend had a really horrible trip next to me. I was laughing and crying and I was full of joy understanding my life and my passions. And he was next to me sobbing like, oh my God, my dad, what happened to my dad? And of course, we were close and it was beautiful to go through this together. And he said at the end, it helped him immensely, feeling that amount of fear, being in good care with me, that he knew that I would be there for him, not asking any weird questions, not touching. So I think setting the boundaries, setting the setting, to be honest, if you're really in, and even if you're afraid, fear is going and coming. It's part of life, I guess. And going through it, like all at once, how beautiful is that? And I had that a couple of weeks ago with my dear friend from the Bitcoin consciousness community, with Sam, because we came together to Mexico and I didn't smoke weed in 8 months. And I was so happy, like, oh my God, in Mexico, I'm going to smoke a joint with Sam. That is awesome. I love it. And to be honest, we bought weed and it was so strong. We had no idea. We really rolled up a big fat blunt and we put so much weed in there because it was almost like no tobacco. And we had like 10 minutes of extreme panic next to each other. And we were like, oh my God, are we going to get through this? Are we going to roll another one? Yes, for sure. Let's do it again. And it was beautiful to go through these fears and having someone at your side that is like, yeah, let it go. Cry, scream, doesn't matter. Let's do it. It's going to be over soon, as all these funny trips will be over one day. 1 minute. I don't know.
It sounds like you experienced the human condition basically with these type of trips all in one. Interesting. That's, yeah. I'm definitely up to it. I would just have to get my wife on board. I would like to do it with her, but I guess
that's nice.
In its time, you know, with more children, it gets harder to get some free time, you know, find people to take care of like 4 children. That gets harder. And you also mentioned earlier languages. You love languages. How many languages do you speak right now?
Six.
Six languages. Which ones? Yeah.
So obviously I speak a little bit of English, German, Spanish, Arabic, Hindi, and Hebrew. But wow. I need to say I love Spanish. And I, as a kid, I knew that one day I would be living in a Spanish-speaking country. I didn't know why. And it happened. And I really need to say, I lived in Portugal last year for a couple of months, and I really felt like, wow, that is not connecting. This language doesn't really make me happy. And I was like, oh my God, I want to go back to a Spanish-speaking country. I want to hear Spanish in my everyday life. I want to go out and hear that language. And I don't know why I'm so in love with that language, but it's making me so happy. Wow. It's a beautiful language.
Luckily for you, it's a huge part of the world.
Yes.
From Argentina all the way to Mexico, right? So a lot to explore. And I agree with you. I also supposedly learned languages while growing up, but fluently I only speak two, Spanish and English. My wife speaks five languages. My children are growing up with three so far, and they're really, really young. And I can see it. Like, once you learn a language, like, the world just opens up, you know? Like, the way I imagine it is, it's like speaking, like imagine dogs, like you hear them barking to each other. I mean, just imagine one day understanding what they're saying. It's like, whoa. And so my wife speaks Russian. I was learning some Russian when I was living in Latvia. We lived there for some time. And I agree that it helps you learning the language also helps you see a different way of thinking. Because the way people think is encoded in their language. You can see the mentality, and it's just something I wish I had more time to do, like learn languages. I would like to learn, right now I'm thinking about finishing German, because I was actually learning German because I was planning on going to Germany to do my medical specialty. Glad I didn't do it in the end. but anyways, all this to say, languages, beautiful thing to learn. Hope everyone picks at least a second language.
Yes.
And have you ever thought what you achieve, what you hope to achieve with all this traveling? Are you just like wandering in the wind? Or do you have like an objective, or what's your goal here?
So I have a goal, and that is maybe unnatural, and it is connected to my psychedelic journey, I would say, because one day I was asking, I brought a question to the mushrooms one day, and I was like, dude, wait a second. Hello. Yalla. Vamos. And I was asking, du musst nicht heimlich machen. Oh, Bibi, dein Ernst? Hast du alles? Okay, so, and I was asking, because I really have no ambitions. I'm not like, oh, I want to die rich, or I want to die young, or whatever. I don't have that. I'm just living, I feel like. And I have no real passions. I'm not like, wow, one day I'm going to be an artist or whatever. But what I really love is the jungle. And there is nothing else that makes me so happy as the jungle. And this is exactly what came back as the answer. Like, just go to the wild wilderness and live out there. That is what will make you really happy and fulfilled. And this is what I'm chasing. Like, no matter where I travel to, I'm like, where is the jungle? Give me the selva. I want to see the crazy animals. I want to be out there at night. And I always try to find really remote places to live, where nobody else is, like really solitude for a couple of weeks at least, to have, I think my parents hate it because they're like, oh, nobody can help you. The kid is all alone. And I'm like, yeah, we are born all alone. We will die all alone. And in between, we meet people. But that is about it. We cannot merge with each other forever. That is impossible. So yeah, being alone and being good in being alone is something beautiful. And I really want to meet as many jungle people as possible, because I really like the tribal lifestyle. That is for me very interesting, to see how they see God, how they speak about God, how they worship their God and Mother Earth, how they treat their kids and the animals, what do they eat, how do they prepare their food. all these things are so interesting to me. This is really only thing in my life to see as much as possible about it and tell my kid, like, what did I find out? Like, apply this. I think it works. And that is all I want.
Well, I know you're in the Yucatan Peninsula, so there's like you literally see the descendants of the Mayans there. Like,
yes,
the people, that's how they look like. And you see like nature. Okay, maybe they're not super isolated, but they're for ecotourism, ecotourists. Holbosch or Holbox.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard of that place or the fluorescent algae, and also Bacalar. La Laguna de Siete Colores. That's also a place I'd recommend. That's in Quintana Roo. But the cenote. Have you been to cenotes? These underwater.
That is our daily in the morning. Like most of the days, we are like, I don't know if we missed one around where we live because I don't even know how many we've been to.
They're
also beautiful.
There's so many.
Yes. And they're so beautiful. And we saw a crocodile, like the first or the second one. We get up really early, like super, super, super early. So we are the first ones in the cenote. So I really like to explore that all by myself. And when the first people are like arriving, it's like, oh, okay, let's go. And we were just swimming and enjoying the morning. And suddenly my son was like, oh, a crocodile, fast, 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 we need to go out. And I was so slow because I was so afraid. I was like slow motion swimming, but I think it is. So the crocodile can eat me while my son is really fast, a fast swimmer. And he could be like out of the water in like 10 seconds. And I was like 2 minutes, like, oh my God, I'm so old, I can't. So that was very shocking to me. And I was climbing out of the water. I was looking into the water and like, oh my God, where is it? And it was so cute. I really fell in love with it. It was good. Crocodile.
A small one? They looked like an adult?
Yeah, I think it was medium sized and it wasn't hungry. So, it was just playing in the water. Then it was in the sun and it was watching us like we were watching it. It was wonderful.
But where were you? Like, did you go to a cenote where you pay to enter, or was it? Like,
yes. No, it was with entry and everything. And they were like, yeah, there are no dangerous animals. And I was like, oh, that is a pity because I want to have some.
Just a crocodile.
Yeah, just the crocodiles. And they were like, yeah, they don't do anything, because we told them like, yeah, there are crocodiles today in the water. I don't know if this is normal here. And they were like, yeah, they don't do anything. So I felt like this is normal, and I really felt this adrenaline rush that was beautiful. Oof, I loved it.
I can imagine.
And I really wanted to eat it. I wanted to hunt it and to eat it. I was like, I think it's illegal. I cannot do it. Just imagine coming home on your motorcycle with a crocodile. Ah, awesome.
They say it tastes like chicken, but you know, everything tastes like chicken for some reason. Actually, I know in the podcast where you interviewed me, you mentioned you were a vegan for some time, and then it's funny because now you're telling me you wanted to eat a crocodile.
Yes.
I don't know if you could like touch into that a bit. Like, what got you into the was that in Germany, the vegan?
Oh,
eating,
yes.
Like, eating vegan? Yes.
Yeah.
Who taught you that, or how did that get into your mind?
Really, that was. Yeah, everyone was suddenly vegan around me, and all my friends suddenly turned into vegan. My best friend, we have kids the same age, and we basically raised them every day together. She was a vegan, and she was like, oh my God, you have to see these movies about how they treat the animals. And I already had like vegetarian tendencies when I was a kid, but my parents wouldn't let me not eat meat, so they always were tricking me into, that's tofu. Of course it was meat. So I never really had the chance to try it. And then I felt like, oh my God, the poor animals. And of course that's wrong. And they are my friends. And then I started traveling and I was like, I cannot be vegan and travel. That is too much stress for me. I'm hungry. I'm a hungry person. I do need a lot of calories. How am I going to get it? And so I gave that up because I really fucked up my hormones, and still up this day, and it has been quite some time now that I'm eating like a normal person again, my skin is fucked. I have no tolerance for carbohydrates. What is the word for this?
Like, yeah, carbohydrates or carbs. Yeah.
Yeah, carbs. Like if I eat too much, my skin is gonna, I'm gonna look like a 13-year-old again. So this happened through my vegan period. I somehow changed something in my body. So if I eat keto now, a lot of meat and like normal things, vegetables, everything's fine. But give me pasta or anything like that, I cannot eat it anymore. And as a kid, I was allergic to bread. My lips were bleeding at the inside. And my parents were like, no, you have to eat bread. You're a German. And I was like, I can't. Obviously, I can't. But turn out, nobody yeah. cares.
Sound like you're like, well, definitely gluten intolerant, but even celiac from what it sounds. Did they ever try to diagnose you for something? Something autoimmune,
no,
maybe?
Nothing. No? Nothing. And I don't go to any doctor because I feel like it's not normal to eat bread. Who invented bread? That's just very scary.
Slave
so
food.
I'm like, exactly. And I'm like, the people in the jungle, they don't eat that and they look so healthy. So I should copy what they eat. That made me think about keto stuff a lot. And I saw the results because a good friend of mine, she switched to keto because she had such really crazy health issues. And I was like, she healed herself within 48 hours. So I was like, that is the way to go. Vegan was so stupid. I cannot recommend it. It is very dangerous in my eyes. And I'm sorry for all the animals that are being eaten out there. I wish I could hunt myself these animals and eat the animals only that I hunt or someone I know. But we live in a world where this is, at least for me, not possible at the moment. So it is what it is. I'm very sorry. But I think, I need to eat meat to stay healthy. It is what it is.
And actually, I remember your son. He wouldn't want to go vegetarian or vegan. Like he wanted meat, right?
Yeah. Yes. So I never put that on him. Yeah. I never put that on him. Like you cannot eat meat thing just because I'm a vegan. That is not what I did. So I always went to this super eco supermarket that only had regional produced meat from the best fields and grass fed, whatever animals they had. And he could eat everything he wants, of course. I was like putting no boundaries. And he loves meat so much. And one day he was like, Mom, we gotta leave the pasta. Like it cannot enter the house anymore. No bread, no pasta, no nothing. And I was like, wow, this dude is serious. And he has some fitness goals. So he's really into feeling the difference between fitness on pasta and going to the gym without eating pasta. Huge difference for him. So he basically banned all these disgusting foods from our kitchen. That made me so proud because in the end, it bettered my health like immensely. Makes it so much easier because now I know that he's okay with the keto lifestyle. He chose it himself. It has to be good because he's a smart boy. And he has still this good connection to his body. What is going in? How does it feel? I don't really have that. I just see it on my skin like, okay, it looks shit. Should stop eating that. So I really trust his journey more than my thought process. And what
your son really seems down to earth. Like since the comment you said that he was in school and like this is like a prison, realizing no pasta, no bread. Like, wow, this guy's... Yeah. How old is he?
he's a cool dude. Really.
Yeah,
he's 12.
Really smart. He's gonna go far. He's gonna go far. Especially with Bitcoin and things like that. With his intelligence, I think he's gonna go really far.
We don't know. Let's see.
We'll see. Let's hope for the best, right? That's what we all hope for as parents and strive for. Given your mindset of traveling, obviously I can see that you go where you're treated best. You don't feel married to a certain place. It's a conversation I see a lot in Noster and a lot of places around the world. Between freedom-minded people, it's the concept of like stay and fight versus go to where you're treated best. And this is mainly I see it mainly all, well, you see it everywhere, but I see it a lot in America, USA, you know. Number one, it's a freedom. It's like the bastion of hope. Even several OG USA Bitcoiners, like HODL, American HODL. I've seen them post that in Austria, like USA is like the Alamo. You know, it's like the final stand, basically. That's what he's referring to. And I like that. What's your take on that? Mm. Like, should you stand and fight? Or should you just go with your best?
So I think I'm a woman. I'm not here to fight for anything. First of all, of course, I fight for my family if someone is mistreating us. But I think my role in this world is not fighting as a woman. What I think that is unfortunate, I think, yes, we should be fighting for our rights. But we are so splitted, like our family systems, they don't work anymore. How can we fight if we don't have a network anymore? So I have nobody who's supporting me. How can I fight? They will take away my kid. They will, that is what it is. So they have me in their hands, basically, if I step up and do something. And what I really feel for my personal family situation, I'm just me. I'm a single mom. And of course, we have a huge dog that is fighting for me, but he's not fighting any like non-physical fights for me. So I need to be the one who is not stressed out, who is basically as happy as can be, so I can manage this family as well as I possibly can. And to stay healthy, I think I chose running away a lot. But I hate Germany. Not like, I love Germany. I love the culture. I love like, but not how it's now. What is that? I'm not fighting for that shithole. That is it. That is, what is even happening over there? Like, men are getting so weak. They are so feminine. And I'm not up for fighting for them. Like, what are they doing? Like, guarding my backpack in the meantime or what? I don't even know. So I'm not fighting for a community that is not mine anymore. And I think it is on purpose that we are not able to fight anymore because they destroyed the families with all their shitty feminism. So I'm like, let's vote with our feet. Let's go where they treat us best. And they will see, or I think the world will adapt to more and more people being kicked out of their countries for some reason, gather in another country and start over. And I think our network that we are growing, like it's all over the world. And this is a huge fight because we opt out. That is the biggest response I think we can make, because I learned something from my parents. All the time when I was stepping up for myself, it got worse at home. Like, you know what I mean? If you are like, oh, my mom just hit me in the face, and you're like, give me some more, bitch. I'm going to fuck you up this time. She will show you. She will show you. So I learned, just keep quiet. Do your business somewhere else where you are treated better is a peaceful option. Because who am I to decide for everyone else? Like, I'm not fighting for them. But what is your take? And where do you want to go next? What is your, like, go-to thing where you are, you think you will be treated better as your family unit?
Well, personally, I agree with you. I also subscribe to the go to where you're treated best mentality. But I also have, I understand the stand and fight. I can see, especially, I guess, in men, you know, this is like, you grew up here, generations here. And I don't think there's a wrong or right answer. I think we need this fight on all fronts. We need the people who want to stay and fight to try to promote freedom in the local area, you know, like, but we also need those people to are willing to move out, to go to places where there is more freedom, to build out those communities. So instead of, like, for example, USA being the Alamo, like the whole country, no, I see it more as Alamos, like a lot of tiny Alamos, communities everywhere, coordinating with each other, thanks to the internet, Noster, Bitcoin. It's so much more easier to interoperate with each other. But the way I see it is, there's people who are willing to, because in my opinion, family goes first. Like, if my family is in danger, screw wherever I am geographically, physically. I don't care if my family was there for 100 generations. I'm getting out of there. Family goes first. I think evolutionary, it makes sense. Like, your genetic bloodlines go out to get eliminated. And I guess it goes against survival. So I have no problem leaving, going where I'm treated best. Because in case one of the Alamos fall, imagine all the Alamos were in the United States. Because it's a non-zero chance that USA falls completely, right? I mean, it could happen. It's unlikely, but it can happen. I would love it if there are other options outside of this this territory. And also the way I see it, when those people who say like USA is the Alamo, like 50% of the population hates the other 50%. So I imagine the actual Alamo, imagine if the inhabitants there, half of them hated the other half. I don't think they would have been able to hold off the Mexican army for as long as they did. So the way I see it is that USA is best to be separated. Like, you know, what do they call it? National divorce. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I also say the same thing for Mexico. I think Mexico should be at least three separate countries, South, Center, and the North. We're different in both physically and how we think, our work ethic, all that varies a lot. So that's my point of view, more or less, on how that should be. But from what I understood, like, do you think, like you said, you mentioned in the beginning, like as a woman, you think there's no point in staying to fight. Do you think men should perhaps stay and fight more, or like just to clear that up?
I don't know, to be honest. I think it's a very personal, individual thing. And I really think if you have like a huge... if you have land and farmland and animals, then of course you're not going to pack up your cows and leave. Then of course there's more to it and you want to fight for it as a man if you have a family and a compound and all these things. And I really think men are there to protect the family. So I think if the man says there is a chance that we can fight through it and keep our land, awesome. If not, let's go somewhere else. Because I think fighting is not always getting back or against something or someone else. Fighting is also leaving and setting up your tent somewhere else. What I really think is mainly what I see with the people I spend time with, a lot of them have this mindset of, that men are not there to fight and women are there to work and do all these things. And I'm like, but I was born with a vagina that produces kids. So I don't really think I should be there fighting for my land and deciding if we should leave or what. I mean, I have to do it now because there's no man in my family. But in the end, I really deeply believe inside my heart, like I'm a woman, I belong in the house, do the household, raise the kids, support my man in every way I can, and in a non-physical realm maybe. And I really think men are more in physical like tasks. They are just better in this. So I really think it's individual thing, but I think if I was a man, I would have left Germany also, because what is there to fight for? But maybe if I find a place where I really fit in, if I'm a man, woman, I don't care. And then maybe I feel like fighting. And that might change over the years. I don't know. Maybe it's, it also depends on what's happening out there.
I think it has to do with the community you make. Yes. If you had a strong community, friends, family, there's a stronger incentive to stay and fight, I would say. But as you mentioned, really have that strong connection with your family. I guess it makes it easier to also leave. And I agree. Like, I think part of the fiat mind virus is, women have to work, and it's just inverted the roles and everything completely. Because from what you're telling me, you're a strong, independent woman. Yet you just said that you would prefer to like stay at home and support your children. And
yes, and
my wife also went through the similar thing. Like my wife said, like if she would have talked to herself like 10, 15 years ago and told us she was going to be homeschooling and being at home, and like her younger self would say she's crazy. Like, no, she always had this mindset. I'm a strong, independent woman. She went through med school, one of the most difficult careers out there. And and she went to orthopedics surgery. She was going to surgery. That's a very male predominant field. Like just men there. Like basically it's like a lot of carpenters in the surgery room breaking bones. So, and she was there. She was there. And despite all that, she realized that her calling was to be a mom. And she realized that when she went to Germany, she got offered a job in a hospital. She was doing her practices. She was passing these exams to validate her title and everything. She was this close to getting it. But she felt like she had an emotional breakdown just being away from her children and her family. So that's when she knew that she wanted to homeschool. And it's cool. It's good because that brought me up to the up to bat. It made me, okay, if my wife wants to do this, I have to bring income. I don't know how, but you know, it just forces you into an uncomfortable situation, but this uncomfortable situation helps you grow.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful that she did that. And I'm grateful for all the challenges life has thrown at us. We've managed to become stronger because of it. And I think that's part of being a Bitcoiner, you know, and realizing life is not easy. Like part of the fiat mind virus is life should be easy. That's what they tell you, right? You shouldn't be suffering. Yeah. People shouldn't be touching your emotions with a petal of a rose. Like don't even touch those. It's like, it's crazy what the world's gotten turned into.
Yeah, that's
but,
true.
But yeah. Anyways, what you have a podcast. I don't know if you want to tell the audience about it and what you concentrate. What's your main topic?
So I think the main topic is really everything about self-sovereign lifestyle. I started it with the focus on unschooling because I thought I want to know more about unschooling people and how they do it. And I wanted to invite all these authors and speakers and all these people to connect with them and to pick on their brains and to ask them all the questions I had. It was really therapy for me. And I realized after like 10, 15 episodes, I was like, wow, unschooling is much more about deschooling myself. So it became more or less like a self-sovereign help podcast of how to deschool yourself from the fucking programming you had in your childhood to set yourself free so you can set your kids free without having these mom guilt or like these anxiety about, oh, are they ever going to learn or all these things. So you can just relax into other people are doing it. Everyone is thriving in this community. It's beautiful. It's really, I try to give people hope. And this is what I get as a feedback, like, oh, I was listening to that episode. It made me realize how much fear I had around a certain topic. I was able to let go of it. So this is really it. Listen to it. Hear what bullshit I say. My stupid questions to all my wonderful guests. And really, it's more or less therapy for myself because it made me so strong in my opinion about unschooling and homeschooling, world schooling, free schooling, whatever you want to call it. And I want to give that to other people too, because I think it's the hardest part is to work on yourself. So you're not giving your demons the chance to raise your kid. That is the opposite of what we want as Bitcoiners. So, and I do invite a lot of Bitcoiners because I figured out they are just so awesome and most of them that I meet are homeschoolers or unschoolers. So I love that combination of free-minded people. And this topic combination is just awesome of how they got into Bitcoin, how they got into free education. It's almost the same rabbit hole somehow, I feel like, because most families are falling into both of them at the same time mostly. And I'm just super happy to be connected to these people and to feel that energy and to give it back to the community of other homeschooling, unschooling people. And I need to say, I think it's been 4 years now, maybe 4 years or 3 years, and I almost have 100 episodes. I'm thinking about stopping the podcast because I learned enough. Let's see.
I think I first heard about you. I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you were on Tally's podcast. From homeschooling kids, were you on there?
Yes, I think yes, so.
I think I heard. Yes, Scott is his. Yes, is her husband. Yes,
Scott and Tally, they're so wonderful. Yeah.
Yes, actually, I met Scott. Well, I got to know Scott through the Orange Pill app, nice. And then he presented me to Tally, and Tally has a group for women. My wife joined there, so it's just amazing how Bitcoin has just come together, and. I heard your podcast, and that's when I started following you. So that was like a year ago. I knew you a year ago, but through your podcast.
Crazy.
And I've been hearing your stuff, really good stuff. Everyone, if you're interested in unschooling, check out our podcast. It's a really, really good stuff. And one thing I love about podcasting is you get to know new people. Like the reason I started was, well, I started in Spanish. And it was to help educate my patients because, you know, you tell them about how to eat differently, how to live differently. And like, you have like 1 hour, hour and a half, and like, they have so many questions. So I said, okay, I'll make some videos so that after the consultation, they can like restudy and rehear everything. But then it started growing. And then I started, oh, maybe I should invite people on, people who know a bit more or share their experiences. And I started realizing you can, like, the amount of people you get to know and this social capital you start building up, it is so essential for life. And then I started getting into Noster. And then I don't know if you know who the Grindr is. We're gaming buddies. We liked the game a lot back then, a few months ago, actually. And he said, hey, you should start a podcast in English. And this is what I'm doing right now. And I'm getting to know people such as yourself here. And you're in Mexico, so who knows? Maybe we'll meet up one of these days. So this is amazing because I've always wanted to meet a fellow Bitcoiner and just talk about life, how we're doing right now, but in person, because it's very different over a camera than in
That's
person.
That's so true.
And, oh, Alex, I don't know. I want to be respectful of your time. I have a few questions here. Do you have like 10 minutes or do you have to go?
Yes. No, 10 minutes is okay.
10 minutes, okay. Okay, perfect. So real quick. So I going quickly back to the conversation we were having earlier about staying or fighting, going where you're treated best, and et cetera. So I've been hearing a lot frequently about, I've been hearing podcasts where Simon Dixon is on. I don't know if you know who he is. I didn't know who he was until like 2-3 weeks ago. So he's been on multiple podcasts like BTC Sessions. Daniel, who's now hosting the What Bitcoin Did podcast. So he's been on these relatively big podcasts. And he has an interesting point of view on the geopolitics of the world. He talks about the three complexes he calls the, what is it called? The proof of weapons network. So it's like, you know, the typical military industrial complex, but now combined with the financial industrial complex and the technical industrial complex, you know, like Google and Meta and all those things. So to sum it all up, it seems like this part of the world, like you, now South America, North America is now USSA's bitch. You know, it's like USA has apparently, according to Simon Dixon, has agreed to reduce its, because, you know, it's no longer the hegemonic power, you know, it's no longer number one. It's competing with China and the Arab state, etc. So it seems that their control is going to be reduced. The other side of the world, you got the China, Russia, the Arab states, and stuff like that. And my idea was to like, okay, I want a second residency in Paraguay, El Salvador, a passport. Yes. But now I'm thinking more and more of, maybe I should get one in Asia as well. Or because what I don't know right now is how much to focus on. Perhaps maybe first get somewhere in Asia. And it's just the world feels so uncertain right now. All of this, where am I trying to get at? My question, since you've traveled around the world a lot, what was your impression, for example, in Asia? Like, would you sense Chinese presence there? Could you sense like the local population? Could you sense like some sort of how to formulate this question? basically, how would you hedge your safety, I guess, from these growing regional powers? You know what I mean? Like, how would you play this arbitrage game? You know what I mean?
Yeah, so I need to say I'm really stupid in these things because I'm not interested enough. I do understand it, and I do have quite a sense of what countries are like, what is going upwards or downwards, where's the trend going. What I can say is Europe is, for me personally, going downwards. It doesn't make sense for me, at least. I mean, I have the German passport. I'm good in Europe, and I'm easy, like, traveling anywhere. But I don't know. I didn't feel at home in Asia, so I never thought about getting a passport over there, because in a really extreme situation, you might need to live where your passport is from. So my thought is, I want to have a passport from a country that I really enjoy living in. So I'm thinking about the Mexican passport, or at least residency, so I can spend as much time as I want here. Because from my point of view, I really do believe, and call me crazy, I really do believe that everything is in such a crazy change. How do we know what's going to happen? And I really think all of these big, countries that are, running the show, in the back, there's one government. It's not separated. China is as involved in this bullshit as US, and it's all one disgusting shit show. So I'm like, I don't care what they do. I just want to have peace where I am. And if it's in nature, it's the chances are high. Nobody is going to come and kill me because of my belief system or whatever. So I play this safety card being never in cities, never in like areas with a lot of people or these kind of things, because I think shit is about to go down and we have no clue about how ugly it's going to get. So playing itself, having multiple passports is awesome, I guess. I love it. Yeah. The idea is awesome.
I agree. And I think I just knew how to formulate it better. For example, you know, Edward Snowden did what he did. He went to Russia, you know? So basically it's...
Is it true?
Is it true?
I think it's all fake. It's part of the fake shit show.
Oh, yeah, that could be true. You don't know what's true anymore. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, yeah, maybe I got your point. Maybe there's no point at worrying too much about so many residencies and passports, because it's all the same cabal. It's an interesting same point of view. Show. Yeah, it could be.
Yeah,
and it's just better build communities.
And I think better to build something outside of these systems, first of all. And secondly, I believe in the flow of life. If you have like an open heart and you have a vision, you have a goal, it will fall in place if it's meant to be. And if it's a second residency or passport, this is awesome. And I know the Bitcoin way, they do have this awesome program that you can buy your Panama residency with Bitcoin through the Bitcoin way. And these kind of things, this is what I don't know. If I had a lot of Bitcoin, I would do it.
I'm thinking about that too.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it's $35,000 minimum, depending on. I checked their website not long ago because I'm looking for that right now. Right now, I'm not there yet financially. That's why I have El Salvador, Paraguay on the on my sites. And moving on, Mexico. So you're here in Mexico. You've been here for a few months now. Since our last conversation, I gave you some ideas on like perhaps how to use Bitcoin, utilize it here. I'm thinking you've done a lot since then. And I think this could be valuable information for anyone outside of Mexico, anyone from Europe or USA wanting to come here. What have you done? What have you found helpful or useful?
Yeah, so basically everything you told me what I should need to try out, I did. And I figured out you can easily get like account, like banking account at OXXO, that is like a convenience store. You can buy disgusting food and water there, but you can also have a bank account in that convenience store, which is nice because they don't really want to know a lot about you. They don't ask any freaky questions, and you can get your cash from there. If you sell your Bitcoin online, you can send the money, you can recollect it. What I really learned to love are Bitcoin ATMs over here. That is really my go-to thing. I never used it before because I didn't have to. But now that my life is more and more being paid in Bitcoin, like I somehow need US dollar and pesos over here from time to time. So I try Bitcoin ATMs. This is really what lights my heart. And what I really try to figure out at the moment is how to get a bank account that is not based in Europe, but based somewhere else. But I think it's not a hard thing to do. I just need the time. So I'm always like in a lack of time for these kind of things. What I really like is this peer-to-peer selling and buying and then sending the money to a local store to pick it up there. I think that's beautiful. I've never thought about it because in Germany that would be impossible, I think. But over here, I see people do it all the time. I think yesterday or the day before, there was a dude in line in front of me, and he got cash from OXXO. And I was like, yeah, that is so beautiful. I love it. More of it. I love how the people are so, I love the Mexican, I have the feeling people are like, I do whatever the fuck I want. And I love it. This is what I want to see, to feel. And this is what I really learned from. To just make it peer-to-peer, to not even talk about the government, and to find a way to work around all these things. And this cash society here, awesome. I love it. You can do anything with pesos here. Residency, you don't meet the requirements. If you have pesos, nobody cares. I really like that because it is way more honest than anything else. And people are so afraid of the police here and like, oh, they're going to raid you, then you have to pay. Yeah, but you know it. And in Germany, it's the same. They're going to raid you, you have to pay. But here, you already know the price because it's like for everyone the same price. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And you don't have all the paperwork. And so what I'm basically trying at the moment is the different accounts to set that up as a foreigner. And if you have a little more pesos, they do it for you, even if you're a foreigner.
Yeah. So. And beautiful. No, it's really cool. Maybe you should like write a blog or something, or even a podcast on your experience in Mexico, like for expats. Who knows? That could be something very
useful.
It's on
my to-do list.
Because there's a lot of, I call them refugees from Europe, mm-hmm. Canada, true. I would say, leaving their tyrannical governments to come to, let's say, less competent governments. So,
yes.
But one of the reasons that I want to leave, well, not leave, but I have a second residency and not just stay in Mexico and not have it as my only passport is, well, number one, my income is mainly online. And unfortunately, it's not mainly through Bitcoin. It's through simple, you know, it's bank transfers using fintech and stuff like that. And recently, actually this year, January 2026, a law that Mexico passed at the end of last year has come into effect where supposedly, they have backdoor access to exchanges and digital markets. Like it can be from Amazon to, I don't know, things like Strike to buy Bitcoin. In theory, they can access it directly. If the company doesn't want to do this, then they get denied the Mexican market. They get shut off of the Mexican market, basically. So they have to comply. So basically, they're going to make the companies do the KYC and all this stuff for them. And they just whoop, pop in the back and see, you know, what transactions you're doing. And supposedly they're also integrating this with AI because Mexican government is very well known to be incompetent. So, you know, you could easily evade taxes and stuff like that. No problemo. But now if AI is doing it and they have this backdoor access, they can in theory automatically get the information like, oh, there's this guy. He got this much money, but hasn't declared anything. So like, I don't know how much that is true because one thing is theory and one thing is what is actually implemented in real life. But there's a lot of weird things happening here since, you know, it's socialist. Oh, it's always been socialism to some extent, but it's been even more left-leaning policies since AMLO, our previous president, came to power. Here in Mexico, they stay in power for 6 years. So he's done. Oh. And then the person that he vouched for is in power now, Claudia Sheinbaum.
So how many years do we have to... but how many years are left with...
Oh, she barely came in 2024, I believe. Yeah, so she's she's going to be with us for at least 5 more years.
Yeah, not nice. So, but you know what? They said the same for Germany and it didn't work out.
With Olaf? No, what was his name? Schulz?
Olaf, I don't even know the names of the politicians in Germany.
Yeah.
But they said the same about this AI and backdoors and this and that. And it was true in partially they caught some people, but in general, it didn't change shit.
I'm sure they focus on the high net worth guys, maybe. People moving millions. They're like tiny plebs like us.
Yeah.
But either way, I'd rather not stick around to find out. So I want to...
No.
Have a second option, have a tax residency in Paraguay or El Salvador where 0% capital gains or tax like that. So that's what I plan on doing. And Well, anything you want to finish the podcast up with? Anything we left out? Anything you want people to know? Or where people can follow you apart from your podcast?
I'm only on Noster. My podcast is on Spotify, Fountain, Apple, all these disgusting things. But Fountain is my favorite, of course. What I wanted to say is that I really appreciate the work you are doing, because I somehow I stumbled upon your Noster profile and was like, wow, we need more of these men in this world. This is awesome. He's eating meat. And, you know, people in Germany don't eat meat anymore. And it shows. They don't fight for their families. So I really want to give you a shout out, because you have been teaching me so much in my podcast that I went out of our conversation with a to-do list that is not even halfway finished, that I still need to work through all the resources, all the ideas. I've been starting to listen to the audiobook of these dudes with the curriculum for what is it, 4 years to get around college, but have all the degrees and all these. I think you mentioned a book to me, but I already forgot the topic, But we are now listening to it and it's awesome. So I wanted to say that we need more of you, your content, because this is how we should raise our families and how we, really should be doing things like eating properly, using the right money, shouting out from the rooftop, this is how we do it, let's do it all together. So I really need to say thank you for all the input I got from you, all the ideas, and I really think you are doing a really awesome job. And I'm so happy that you have 4 kids. I hope you make 4 more. Because we need more of these beautiful kids out there that are being raised in a very human, healthy way, like away from the matrix and all these things. So beautiful. Thank you so much for what you are doing, really.
Thank you very much, Alex. That means a lot coming from you. And yeah, we want at least 6 children. So I think that's part of the solution to make the world a better place. Make more children, make more good, upstanding children who can do this. And that's one of the good things, I guess. You see who the supposed enemy is, or at least the brainwashed people, like the woke. They don't want to have children. People want to change gender. They don't have children. So eventually, we will be more the ones who the one with a more freedom-minded mentality. But yeah, we'll see what happens. Alex, thank you again very much for coming on. I think I would love to have you on again, perhaps in a half a year or a year, to see how your progress is going in Mexico, what you've learned. Because I think you can become a very important wealth of knowledge for expat Bitcoiners coming to live in Mexico. Anyways.
Let's see.
All right, Alex, thank you and take care.
Thank you so much.